Welcome to the Sickle Cell Disease edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the SCD community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're at the 2025 NORD Breakthrough Summit in Washington, D.C., and our guest is Goli Lorenzo Green, a patient advocate for sickle cell disease and a D.C. native who grew up in Gary, Indiana, and now lives in Houston, Texas. Goli says he came to NORD to give back to the community and support the cause. Thank you so much for being a guest on our podcast.
Thank you.
Well, it's a big topic. Sickle cell is, of course, a horrible disease. I understand 3 million people in the world have it, including roughly, am I right, 150,000 here in the U.S.?
Yeah, that's about right, yeah.
Tell us your story.
So my story, I was born in Washington, D.C., George Washington Hospital. At the time, my mother knew that I was going to have sickle cell. There was some testing that was being done. So they were able to identify that I was going to have sickle cell disease. And essentially, at the time, this would have been 1980, they told my mother that, you know, I probably wouldn't live past the age of 5. Which is a normal, you know, story you'll hear from sickle cell patients that were born in that time frame. I was born, I don't think I had a major crisis until the age of maybe 3 or 4.
And you're 45 today.
And I'm 45 today, yeah. And I would say even which is a blessing, but I would say even not having a major crisis until the age of 3 or 4 is a blessing too, because at least you can verbalize what you're feeling and what's happening. I can't imagine an infant or a baby that can't verbalize like going through a sickle cell crisis and trying to figure that out as a parent.
What was that like?
I actually remember having a sickle cell crisis. I don't think it was my first one, but it was probably one of the early ones. It was a crisis of my spleen. So I was having a pain in my stomach and I just told my mom I didn't feel too good and I couldn't really walk right. And I was holding my stomach. So she took me to the hospital. I had a great pediatrician, Dr. Thompson, love her to death. She is the one who got me in and they figured out that I had, a crisis of the spleen. So basically my spleen shriveled up. I don't have a spleen today.
But they knew that you had sickle cell, so it wasn't a matter of diagnosing. They already knew it was wrong.
Yeah.
It was just a matter of time before symptoms presented themselves.
Yeah, and that's the problem. You don't know what it is that's going to present itself. So it could be arteries. It could be bones. Like, I mean, I have a replaced right hip. I have tibial implants in both legs, 3 screws in each ankle, 3 screws in each
leg. And yet, looking at you, nobody would ever guess that there was anything abnormal.
Yeah, that's why we say we like to be seen strong, because there's moments where we definitely are down, but there's also moments where, you know, you wouldn't be able to pick me out from a lineup of people on who's sickly and who isn't.
Absolutely, you know? Not. After that first crisis, what happened next and how did this progress?
What happened next was, you know, getting used to understanding how to maintain your health, which, you know, the first thing is drinking plenty of water. It's like it lubricates your veins and arteries. It keeps the blood flowing because, you know, sickle cell, it's a sickled cell. So it's just like what it sounds like. And so what happens is when your body overproduces them, they attach themselves to one another and they block the passageway through your body and veins and arteries and whatnot. And that's what causes the pain because you have a blockage of blood flow.
Describe, if you will, that pain.
Yeah. It can be debilitating sometimes. And then there's some times where it can be, you know, less intense, but it'll break you down. It's a pain that, you know, I've had crises where they've come out of nowhere and I've gone from like, you know, just walking and just literally falling to the ground. It feels like a sharp, stabbing, aching pain all at the same time.
And has that prevented you from participating in sports or in normal childhood activities growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so thankful for my pediatrician because she was very much on the side of do the things that you can do to control it, but don't stop him from participating. So like, you know, I remember I made the high school basketball team, not varsity. I made the B team, right? So I want to be clear because there were really good basketball players in my high school. But I made the team. That was something that a lot of people that had sickle cell were like, man, you shouldn't even be trying, because the strenuousness of the practice, you know, the frequency, the amount of rest you need, the fatigue that you have sometimes, just generally very difficult to do. But, you know, I made the team, and that was important enough to me, just making it. I didn't stay after that. I was like, you know what, I'm going to go get a job and work. But you know, there's definitely things that hinder you from being able to live a normal lifestyle, but you can live a normal lifestyle.
Now, in the introduction, we heard reference being made to discrimination and not being taken seriously by the medical establishment and an extreme reluctance to participate in clinical trials. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a bit?
There's a lot of difficult things that take place in having sickle cell. Number one, there's a bias. The majority of individuals that you'll see that have sickle cell are usually from the Black community here in the United States. You know, the main thing that they're going to give you if you enter an ER to combat your sickle cell crisis is going to be fluids, IV fluids, and pain medicine to control the pain. And so there's a stigma of, you know, all sickle cell patients being drug seekers out there. And that creates a very difficult environment for you to get through when you're dealing with something that's as serious as sickle cell.
I remember interviewing a woman in Baltimore who has sickle cell, and she said the same exact thing. And she said, in fact, they accused her of being a drug addict.
Yeah.
And making the whole story up.
Yeah.
And coming in only to get free drugs.
Yeah. I mean, and it's crazy. I mean, and now here's the thing. Yeah, I'll play devil's advocate for a moment. If you were to have a disease where you get introduced to pain medicines, opioids or something like that, and then you become addicted to it, the thing that the healthcare establishment should be concerned with is how do we incorporate things in the process that ensure that these patients don't become addicted to opiates? Like, we know they're going to have chronic pain and they're going to probably be on this medication for a certain period of time. So incorporate the things that need to be there protocol wise on how you wean them off, what you tell them to eat, what they drink, what the process is to go through those cycles, because that's not normal. A normal person wouldn't even be introduced to that medication.
Right, but because the pain is so debilitating, they need something to get through the day.
100%. Right? And in some cases, you need something just to be able to rest. There's been sickle cell crises that I've had where I didn't sleep for days at a time. And I don't, to describe the pain, to put it into a context that people can understand, you know, if you were to take a Tylenol and feel a little dizzy, that Tylenol can do nothing for a sickle cell crisis. Like, you might as well not take it at all. Like, you would need like strong pain medicine, whatever, morphine, Dilaudid, whatever. And there's some instances where even that, it will not control the pain.
Even morphine?
Even morphine. I've had crises where I'm literally trying to jump out of the bed, or I'm rolling around, or I can't breathe. My breath is so out of whack that they're like, hey, we need to put oxygen on you. My heart rate is through the roof. Like,
so how can it be that with this pain and with heart rate, which can be measured, that people wouldn't believe you?
I think it's a couple things. I think it's being desensitized, right? Because like, I don't go to 15 different hospitals. I have one hospital I go to. You may see me 5 times in a year. You may become to like know me because you're like, oh, I've seen him before. So you have some people that will be like, oh, I've seen him before, let me help him. And you have other people who are like, I've seen him before, he's an addict. And you see certain things so frequently. It's kind of like a police officer. If you see certain things so frequently, you become desensitized to it. You know, well, that's not a real situation. This is a real situation.
That's a good point. I want to talk a bit about treatment and about advocacy. Tell us, if you will, a bit about your advocacy work on behalf of sickle cell patients.
Yeah, so I've been able to participate through CBOs, community-based organizations. I currently participate with one in Houston called the Sickle Cell Association of Houston. I also have been able to partner and work with pharmaceutical organizations like Agios Pharmaceuticals, and that's given me an opportunity to give back to the community, but also share the knowledge that I have from experiencing the difficulties with sickle cell with people who can help us, right? Because I can give you the experience, but I can't give you the science of how to create the treatment. I don't know that. So that's where those partnerships and relationships come in. Sickle Cell Houston, a great CBO that really helps to get the word out and to talk to people in the community to let them know that there are trials and campaigns that are available. And I think there's CBOs like that across the country. And then luckily there's companies like Agios who are willing to participate in rare diseases like this to create, you know, solutions and treatments to clinical trials, for clinical trials.
So let's talk a bit about therapies and about treatments. I mean, there's really no cure for sickle cell, mm-hmm. but a lot of people are working on it.
Well, I think a lot of people are working on it now. I think there is a long period of time that people weren't really working on it. And I think it's because of the fact that it was a rare disease and it did affect a very specific demographic, right? But now there's a lot more attention that's being brought to it. And I think that that's great. And I think it's great for the health aspect. But I also think it's great for the healthcare system too. Like if I cannot have to go to the hospital or the ER five times a year.
That'll save money.
Saves money. Right. And it also saves time from the physicians there to be able to, you know, have more time to focus on other patients that are okay in the ER.
So let's talk about Agios mm-hmm. and your relationship with the company and what this company is doing.
I feel like the relationship is very natural at this point because we've been working together for almost half a decade, I would say. We've been working on this clinical trial campaign called Rise Up, which is a study on mitapivat and its effect, not just on sickle cell, but a variety of other illnesses. But I'm focused on the sickle cell aspect of it. So I'm in the campaign. So being somebody from the sickle cell community, they wanted to make sure they had people who've experienced sickle cell to help present the campaign to others.
But you're not in the trial yourself.
So I'm not in the trial myself, no.
So a question, if I can. I mean, this going back to this comment that Sarah made on discrimination, mm-hmm. how do you overcome this deep distrust of the medical system where I know for decades, mm-hmm. At least in the U.S., Black Americans did not want to be in clinical trials.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that there's a lot of really important things to point out about that go way before like my time. I think, you know, you look at what happened with the Tuskegee Airmen and the things that were done to them unbeknowingly to them, right? And this is a consistent. Unfortunately, we have this history in the country. And so I think for African Americans, we're always a little skeptical of clinical trials. And then if you are met with the bias in certain things that will present themselves when you go to certain hospitals and whatnot, then it kind of throws you off. But I've been blessed enough to have really good physicians. So I don't distrust all physicians. Like I have physicians that I definitely trust and depend on. And if they let me know that they feel like there's a reason for me to be engaged in certain activities, then I'm going to do it.
We're just about out of time. Any final thoughts?
The final thought I would say is that, you know, be open-minded. That goes for patients and, you know, people in the healthcare establishment. Be open-minded, willing to take feedback and work together to come up with solutions.
Wonderful. We've been talking with Goli Green, patient advocate for sickle cell disease at the NORD Breakthrough Summit here in Washington, D.C. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.